From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. In a community where homelessness is such an issue, the added curse of housing discrimination can create an almost impossible situation for many. And such discrimination is often aimed at people who are challenged to defend themselves, people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Today on the show, you'll hear from the Fair Housing Council of Oregon and learn how they defend against this type of discrimination throughout our community and state. Sometimes, those with disabilities face the double whammy of being denied housing at the outset or denied reasonable accommodation once they take up residence. Then, we'll finish the show by talking to the Register Guard about the slow but steady progress of an emergency room potentially opening up back in Eugene. That's next on Oregon on the Record. The Fair Housing Council of Oregon is a statewide civil rights organization that proactively promotes housing justice, equity, and inclusion. Its mission is to end illegal housing discrimination and promote equal access to housing choice through education and enforcement of fair housing law. And the reason for the organization's existence is obvious. Historically and statistically, identifiable groups of people have received unfavorable treatment in housing transactions. Today on the show, you'll hear from the Fair Housing Council and hear how they protect people in the community, including a group that doesn't get as much help as it may need, those with mental and developmental disabilities. Jamie Gatewood, Education and Outreach and Development Manager, Fair Housing Council of Oregon. Jamie, thanks so much for coming on and talking with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me today. Glad to be here.
Why don't we just start with this? You know, what is the Fair Housing Council of Oregon? What do you do?
Yeah, the Fair Housing Council of Oregon is a statewide civil rights organization. And what we do is we proactively promote housing justice, equity, and inclusion. Our mission is to end illegal housing discrimination. And the way that we try to meet our mission and our goals are through education, like telling people about their fair housing rights. And then for housing providers, educating them about their responsibilities under fair housing laws. And then we also have an enforcement team. And what they do is they can directly advocate for people who are experiencing illegal discrimination in housing based on their protected class. And we like to think of those as their protected identity.
Okay. And do you work sort of in terms of education? Do you hold like seminars and classes online, this type of stuff? How do you spread the message and education throughout the state?
Yeah, that's a great question. We actually do it in a lot of different ways. We do in-person trainings, and usually we partner with community-based organizations to do those. And that can be for their staff, like for home visitors and advocates and, folks basically who are just working with the groups who are most affected by housing discrimination in our state. So that might be families with kids. It might be culturally, specific organizations who are working with folks who have immigrated to this country or people of a different national origin, people of specific races. Some groups experience more discrimination than others, definitely folks with disabilities. And so we partner with them and come in and do trainings. And then we also do trainings for community members at large, for renters and home buyers who, those are the folks who need to know about their rights too, so that they can, stand up for their rights if discrimination happens. And then we do a lot of online training as well.
Okay. Talk about the challenges and even barriers that people with intellectual and developmental disabilities face in Oregon related to housing.
Yeah, we were able to do some listening sessions with members of the IDD community and their families and support workers. So we really got to understand the specific barriers that this community faces. We hear a lot about discrimination against people who are trying to get accommodations in housing. And so that could be like a change to a physical part of their housing, like widening a doorway or having grab bars in their showers or kitchens, adaptive kitchens. And then sometimes it's a change to a policy, rule, or procedure. Like, for example, if there's a piece of property that says no animals on this property, period, but then somebody might need an animal to restore equal access or enjoyment of their housing. In fair housing, we call them assistance animals. And, if they have a disability and that's needed and they have verification of that from a qualified individual, then they should be able to have that assistance animal. But we hear a lot about housing providers who are not willing to make those accommodations, which is actually illegal under the Federal Fair Housing Act.
I see. How we've all been very familiar for decades now with the Americans with Disabilities Act. How does that come into play in terms of both the law as well as helping your organization both educate and enforce laws on the books?
So, I mean, American with Disabilities Act has a little bit of crossover with housing. It really applies to public accommodation. So ADA laws apply to where members of the public can go. So when we talk about the crossover with housing, it would be like leasing offices or other places like the parking lot, sidewalks, anywhere where the public can come in. That's where ADA law would apply.
Okay.
But it's really fair housing law, which is the Fair Housing Act, that has the enforcement mechanism for housing involved.
Okay.
So if people experience discrimination, they can file a claim under those laws and under Oregon state law as well.
Okay. Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking with Jamie Gatewood, the Education and Outreach and Development Manager for the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. In any way you can contextualize, roughly speaking, I mean, how many people in Oregon might be subject to discrimination or barriers based on a disability?
Well, here's the way that I think about it.
Okay.
The Fair Housing Council of Oregon, we get over 2,000 contacts a year. And
wow.
50% of those are people with disabilities. So it's a huge chunk of the intakes that we get altogether. And interestingly enough, that number is also true federally. So 50% of all fair housing inquiries that come across, different entities like ours, which is called a Fair Housing Initiative Program or other enforcers of fair housing law, 50% are people with disabilities. And then if you think about it, what we know is that only about 1 in 10 acts of discrimination in housing are ever reported. So there's probably a lot more discrimination happening for this population than we even hear about.
So I'm wondering too, and again, with whatever numbers or ways you can contextualize it, in these cases, is it often discrimination or misunderstanding, or is it a really kind of a balance of both?
Well, we can't say it's both, but when you think about it in terms of the law, if a housing provider is violating the law, even if it's a misunderstanding, it's still a violation. And
okay.
So what we try to do is just educate everyone across the board about what fair housing is. And so hopefully they can avoid those misunderstandings. I will say that a really great thing that happens at Fair Housing Council of Oregon is that we can resolve about 70% of all of the inquiries that come to us. And we call them fair housing complaints. So all of those issues that are coming through, about 50% can be resolved with advocacy. And usually that's just talking to a housing provider or a landlord and educating them about the law, because a lot of times they just didn't know. And so rather than go through the process of filing a claim, we can work with them with education. And they often are really agreeable to changing their policy, so that they're no longer in violation of the law.
Okay. I'm also wondering too, in terms of the largest number of violations, is it often that a landlord would just simply refuse to rent to somebody who might have a disability, or is it that they rent to them but then refuse to do accommodations and updates to make that person's life in that housing unit more livable?
I would say it's more likely I mean, we hear about both, but in terms of numbers, I would say that refusal of the accommodations is something that we hear about even more often than just flat out refusal to rent. And sometimes it's really hard to determine, if, what is going on with that. Like sometimes they just become, a housing provider will become cold and aloof and just stop the conversation when they, find out that somebody in the family has an intellectual or developmental disability. And sometimes they just stop returning phone calls. It's pretty rare that they will actually just flat out say, oh, we don't rent to, people with IDD. It's a lot more, it's like a lot more tricky, I guess, the
Sure.
way that it's done. So it's hard. Sometimes it can be hard to determine exactly what's going on, but it can, I mean, when you look at the situation, it's pretty clear in most cases that they find out, and then they just stop the conversation.
Okay.
But in terms of sheer numbers, definitely more likely that, or it happens more often that they're just refusing those accommodations.
Okay. So take us through an example. If somebody feels as if they're being discriminated against, how can they work with your agency? Sort of take us through the process that the Fair Housing Council of Oregon can do for someone.
Yeah, so I mean, you would start off with an intake, and they can make contact with our organization in a couple of different ways. We have an intake and investigations phone number where they can call. Sometimes there will be somebody live to pick up the call, but it's a very small group, small but mighty. And so they do often will respond to folks as they can, through the voicemails that are left on that phone number. And in the order that they're received, we don't provide emergent services, which means that we can't call someone back the next day if it's a very time sensitive matter, just simply because we are a smaller group. Or folks can also contact us through our online portal, and there's a big magenta button on the top of every page on our website that says report discrimination, and that's another way that they can get added to our list. So at that point, then somebody from our intakes and investigations team will call them and start talking about the situation and learn more, do some investigation, make sure that it's a bona fide fair housing claim, which means that it happened in housing, it was happening to a member of a protected class, like for example, somebody with a disability. And then they talk with them about, what steps they would like us to take. We always wait for permission before we would reach out to a housing provider or landlord to talk to them about the law. Sometimes it just means advocating again for one of those reasonable accommodations or another policy change. If that doesn't work, that advocacy doesn't work, or if the person prefers, we can also assist them with filing a claim with the Bureau of Labor and Industries, which has a whole fair housing investigation team. I think a lot of people don't know that about the
Yeah.
Bureau of Labor and Industries here in Oregon, or sometimes with the Department of Housing and Urban Development is another enforcement mechanism. And then we have an attorney pool, so we can connect people with a lawyer or with other legal services. Like Disability Rights Oregon is another group that we partner with, or Legal Aid Services, Oregon Law Center.
Okay. And as I found out, April is Fair Housing Month. Maybe talk about how important it is in terms of spreading this message, both for people who are in need of housing, but also for people who rent houses or just the community in general, understanding this problem and these solutions towards it.
So the Fair Housing Act was passed in 1968, and despite that it's been so many years, 50, oh gosh, 58 years since the passage of the Fair Housing Act, we still see a lot of discrimination happening today. And everyone deserves to have access to safe housing, regardless of who they are, regardless of their race, color, national origin. Whether they have kids or if they're using a rental subsidy, there's lots of different groups, whether, depending on their, no matter their sexual orientation or gender identity. I mean, there's a lot of protected groups, and yeah, everyone deserves to have access to housing, but the reality of the situation is that that's not what's happening. And so that's why we're really glad to be doing this work. And we're the only civil rights organization in Oregon that focuses solely on housing discrimination. So, we partner with other groups who are also helping to enforce the laws, but we're working really hard to, advocate for people and educate people about their rights so that when it's not if discrimination happens, but when it happens, they will be able to identify that discrimination and know how to get help when it happens.
She's Jamie Gatewood, the Education and Outreach and Development Manager for the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. Jamie, really appreciate you coming on and talking to the audience.
Thank you so much for having me today. I appreciate it so much.
Alan Torres covers local government for the Register Guard, and he now brings us an update on something the Eugene community has been hoping for years, a new hospital emergency room. Alan Torres, who covers local government for the Register Guard. Alan, great to see you. Thanks so much for coming in and chatting with us.
Yeah, thanks.
I read your story about, the potential for an emergency room by Mackenzie Willamette, taking a step forward. Let's go back to, what was it, a couple years ago, Mackenzie Willamette made this announcement that said they wanted to open up an emergency room in downtown Eugene. What's been the latest? Your story was about, I believe it was a hearing on this. What happened
yes.
there?
So, Mackenzie Willamette submitted its initial land use application to build the hospital back in, I believe, fall 2025, and then submitted an updated proposal last February that got its official land use hearing last week. And so at that hearing, officials with the developer behind the project, as well as the city, basically made the case for why this hospital meets the various land use criteria, and it seemed, we haven't heard the official decision yet, but it seemed to go well for the developer.
Okay, and where might the project be located?
So it's proposed to go at that block where the Kia dealership used to be,
okay.
Right behind, between the Jack and Box and the McDonald's and the Human Being, that part of 6th and 7th.
Okay. And you mentioned that it seemed to go well for the developer. So what's the process? If they clear this hurdle, what happens next?
If the hearings official says, that you're free to build, then that would move from, this land use phase of just determining that this is, an allowed use and approving the general site plan to more specific development permits, wastewater, electrical, that sort of thing.
Okay. This is Eugene, obviously, and a lot of times people might, they might protest a sunny day, but it sounds like, reading your article, was there any opposition that was expressed?
Not at this hearing. There
okay.
have been community concerns around the hospital generally, and the neighborhood meeting they held for a while back, and there were some negatives there, but no one testified against it at the land use hearing, at least.
Okay, and then as I understand it, the city was there, the city staff was there. What were some of the things they said? Was this the city basically, the staff saying, we approve this?
Yeah, staff did approve it, and okay. then it moves up to the next level, which is the neutral hearings official. But yes, city staff did approve the application, and at that hearing, they, made the case both that Mackenzie Willamette met the land use requirements and also kind of went off script to talk about just that having a hospital again would be good for the community.
Okay. Yeah, that of course makes sense. This is a long timeline, isn't it? We're not talking about a hospital that could, or an emergency room that could be built in the next, 12 months or so. What's kind of the timeline for this?
Most likely not. It was a little unusual. Usually an application like this is for 18 months, predicting an 18-month timeline. And this particular application asked for a 10-year timeline, you know, I don't have a specific example for you, but I mean, I'm sure you've heard a lot about kind of uncertainty within the medical industry recently. Sure. And that was more or less why Mackenzie Willamette asked for this longer timeline, given just sort of the uncertain financial nature of the hospital industry.
From what you could tell, are there any potential issues with the site or with the proposal that might be problematic down the road?
Well, city staff didn't seem to think so. You know, they did ask for, a few of the typical requirements to be waived, largely around vegetation and ambulance access and that sort of thing. But the hearing seemed to go well for the developer. Okay.
Obviously, you know, this downtown Eugene has been without an emergency room for quite some time, and it's been a huge issue that people have talked about. Have you heard, I don't know, has any elected officials weighed in on this? Has there been any kind of, from big decision makers in this town, does it seem like this is going to happen, if that makes sense?
Yeah. I guess I'll say that, you know, if it doesn't happen, I don't think it's going to be like the city's fault or anything like that. I haven't really heard like city councilors or county commissioners go out of their way to support this project.
Okay.
But they were all back when Peace Health closed University District, all of those local officials were very critical of that decision.
So sure,
I would
sure.
imagine they would support this.
Yeah. Well, interesting. We'll see how it goes. It might take some time. Alan Torres, he covers local government for the Register Guard. Alan, always appreciate your insight. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, Oregon Treasurer Elizabeth Steiner and the Sierra Club will join us to talk about important investments the state has made towards the environmental sustainability movement and using pension funds to reduce carbon pollution. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.